Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we are back. And just to finish up on the rundown of the guests this evening real quick, left off by talking about Josh Cutler joining us at around 7:20. And we'll finish the evening off talking a little football with Kerry J. Byrne from coldhotfootballfacts.com. But we turn our focus right now to our state auditor, Suzanne Bump, who's joining us on the phone line. Auditor, how are you this evening?
I'm terrific. What about you, Kevin?
Well, I'm okay, but you might want to ask Joe how he's doing. I don't think he's...
happened to Joe?
I'm fine. Kevin's being dramatic tonight.
Oh, okay. That's a rarity, isn't it?
It is, but yeah. Joe's leaving the show for a week because he's going to a very intense flood insurance conference that they're going to be holding in a couple of other states.
Well, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. But meanwhile, back here at home...
It certainly is pertinent to your listening audience, flood insurance.
That's correct, because we do represent a lot of coastal communities in our
listening area. You sure do.
And I gave him a kudos because it looms very large for not only stuff we can talk about on this program with our newsroom, but some of the citizen coalitions that he serves upon when he's out there talking with folks about flood insurance and the rates and FEMA and everything, you know, everything that has happened over the past 12 to 16 months.
Sure. I hope it's in a warm place.
Oh, Scottsdale, Arizona, so I'll be warm.
Okay, warm and dry.
Yeah, can't get any better than that. Well, you yourself are quite busy, auditor.
I am, as a matter of fact.
First and foremost, from what I understand, you are breaking out the microscope when it comes to mass health, and you've actually asked for a little bit of an increase in your office, get some additional funding for your office to conduct some additional audits on mass health. Kind of give us the rundown on this.
Sure. Well, we in the auditor's office have an obligation, as you know, to audit all the departments in state government. And we do that. We get to each of them every couple of years. But MassHealth has a special place, not just in state government, but also in the auditor's office, because MassHealth, this is the Medicaid program, is so big. It covers so many people. So it's 1 in 5 people in the Commonwealth get their health care coverage through the MassHealth or Medicaid program, and it takes up 33% of state spending. So in the $38 billion budget, it's 1/3. And so that program is constantly being audited. At any given time, we will have four audits that are ongoing. And given the size of the program and the risk that it presents, and the kinds of things that we find when we audit, we've asked the legislature, even in these difficult fiscal times, if they would please increase our budget just so that we can focus more on auditing for MassHealth. Because when we do, we typically find millions of dollars that can be better spent, better administration. Sometimes it's fraud. And so the Commonwealth gets a really good return on its investment when we do auditing in this program.
Now, from what I understand, you're going to look to increase from $300,000 to a little more than $864,000. What are you going to...
We are at $864,000, and I'm looking for an additional $300,000.
Okay, I read that incorrectly.
That will allow me to put two more teams of auditors on the MassHealth audit track.
Okay. How often does your office audit MassHealth?
So always have multiple audits underway. We're going to be releasing one very shortly that has to do with the managed care program. Lots of folks in the MassHealth program, just like out in the private sector, get their care through managed care organizations. What we were seeing, what our auditors found, is that in addition to the insurance companies getting getting paid for their managed care services, they were also getting paid on a fee-for-service basis. So things that should have been covered under the managed care program were also being paid separately. And if we're right, and we think we are right, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars that was inappropriately paid. We have another one that is looking at durable medical equipment. I'm trying to think of which particular one. I think in this case we're talking about wheelchairs, but the issue in this is that we aren't getting what we are paying for by way of equipment to support folks who are disabled. So those are a couple that we have underway. One that we recently did found not a problem with spending, but a problem with the fact that we weren't getting all of the federal reimbursements that we could get. This is because if you are an inmate in a state prison or in a county house of correction, if you had been on MassHealth before you went in, that coverage was suspended. So MassHealth will no longer pay for any medical care you need while you are behind bars. But if something happens and you have a medical issue and you need to go to the hospital outside of the prison walls, then MassHealth can step in and pick that up. And so the feds would help with cost sharing for that. And we weren't taking advantage of that. And so we missed out on $11 million worth of reimbursements because we weren't being smart about asking the feds to step in and cost share when we could. There are lots of ways that we analyze the activities of the program and make recommendations for how it can be better administered, how we can catch inappropriate billing and services that people are getting that they shouldn't be getting, and also how they can get better reimbursements from the federal government.
Give us some, if you could, give us a couple of examples of some of the stuff that has been found regarding the Medicaid audit unit, what you guys have identified in regards to Medicaid.
Oh, sure. We have. You can believe some of the things that we that we have found. So, for instance, this is a really simple example to understand. There are dentists that provide services under the Medicaid program. And we have an ability before we start an audit, you know, in order to start an audit, we kind of sift through all of the information that we have about who has been billing for what services. And we even can tell who their patients are, what kind of patients they have, or even how many patients they have. And so when we see a dentist whose billings don't seem to match up with the number of clients that he has or the profile of the clients that he has, then we will put a spotlight on them and we will look a little deeper. And we have found dentists, for instance, who have, in the course of a year, billed for 27 fluoride treatments for a single child. Now, I hope that those treatments weren't really provided, and I suspect that they weren't provided, but they were billed for. And MassHealth never stopped this dentist when they looked at these billings and said, "What's going on here? You shouldn't be giving kids fluoride treatments that frequently. At that point, it would be endangering the child's health." So that's how we can spot overbillings that really do constitute fraud. And in the case of that individual, we actually referred that case not only back to MassHealth so that they could recoup some of the money, but we also sent it over to the Attorney General's Office for criminal prosecution. So that's an example.
Okay.
On a wider scale, I'll give you one more. So
okay.
We found that we were spending a lot to do drug screenings, urinalysis, you know, for the presence of drugs, and we looked further. It was costing. The state was spending $500,000 every month on drug testing. We thought that was a lot of money. We looked at why. so much money was being spent, and it was because there were no controls, there were no limits. Even when it wasn't medically necessary, they were paying for drug screens. And so after our audit, the spending went from over $500,000 a month to $125,000 a month. So we cut it by 75%, and that's savings. That's not one-time savings for the Commonwealth. That's recurring savings for the Commonwealth when we put this, when we put controls over that program. So that's why I say I think it's worth the investment in the Mass Health unit, because we can save all of that money for the taxpayers.
Mm. What is your plan if the request is not fulfilled by the governor? What if he doesn't give you the additional $300,000?
Well, you know, we'll just keep on doing what we're doing. We just won't be able to do as much of it. And we actually have a number of audits that are waiting in the queue, because we've developed in the auditor's office an ability that nobody else in state government has to work with all kinds of different data, you know, computerized information from multiple agencies. We can tell a lot more about what's going on with state government if we get access to their data, just because we have the technology and we have the skills. So therefore, we have we've got at least 6 or 8 audits that are all lined up in queue. We would love to move them faster through the queue because MassHealth is such a big cost to the Commonwealth. Both the Baker administration and the legislature have said, we've got to do something to rein in MassHealth costs. And so I'm saying, well, I can be your partner in doing that, because we know exactly where you can look for problems with the program, and we can fix it. And we're not talking about throwing people off the rolls or denying payments for legitimate bills to medical providers. We're just saying fix the system so it can't be exploited either by the providers or by the folks who are on MassHealth.
Anything
so
you want?
We'll just keep doing what we're doing.
Okay. Anything you want to say in closing in regards to seeking the increase in your budget to take a closer look at Medicaid and Medicare?
Well, I'll just give you one more statistic, and that is over the past 2 years, for every dollar that was spent on our MassHealth audit unit, we identified $52 in savings. So a return on investment, $1 yielded $52 in savings. I think it tells a good story. So as I said to the legislature, sure, you have to ask, can we afford to do this? It's a tight budget. Can we afford to do this? I said, go ahead and ask that question, and then ask, can you afford not to do it, given what we can find for you.
When do you hope to hear more? Are you scheduled to go?
Well, I think we'll get a good indication. The joint House and Senate Ways and Means had their hearing last week, and that's when I went in and asked for this increase. The House will be debating their version of the budget sometime in late April. The Senate will take it up in May. So hopefully, you know, and then they'll have to go to a conference committee and work out the differences. I'm hoping that sometime in June, I will know. Maybe sooner if they both put out a figure that, you know, and they agree upon it, and then it won't be a matter for the conference committee to debate. I think I'll get a good indication in April of how well my pitch was received.
Okay. Again, we are speaking with State Auditor Suzanne Bump, and she is our guest for the next 5 or 6 minutes. I want to get a chance to speak with you about an audit that you did of Plymouth Superior Court. And from what I understand, that there were issues in the probation office's cash management activities and some other issues as far as the supervising probation officer in some of the stuff they were doing. Give us the breakdown as to some of the stuff your audit found with Superior Court.
Sure. So we have we do audits of the court system. We audit all of the agencies that come under the governor, you know, and all of the other constitutional offices. So we audit all of the executive branch agencies. We audit all of the judicial branch agencies. What we don't get to audit, just by the way, is the legislature. Their books are off limits to us. So in the regular course of the work that we do auditing the courts, we took a look at the Plymouth Superior Court. And in general, we found that the court was well operated. What we found, though, were some problems that, frankly, we have found at all of the superior, or nearly all of the superior courts, which we have audited, which suggests that this isn't just the problem of the probation officers, the probation chief, or the clerk, or the presiding judge in that court. These are system-wide problems. And so what we found was what we found was, for instance, inadequate separation of duties. So if you have a business, you don't want one person to be handling all of the money, to be taking it at the counter, to be putting it down in the books, to be the one to deposit it in the banks and then going over the bank statements, because that's where you have the opportunity for mischief or for outright fraud. But they didn't have enough different hands, different sets of eyes, handling the cash and the bookkeeping duties there. And they weren't getting the bank statements reconciled or getting, frankly, to the bank to make the deposits as frequently as they should. And when you have slippages there, as I say, that opens the door to abuse and to fraud. So we made some recommendations in that regard. So that's about cash. Going to the whole administration of justice, which is, of course, what we look to the court systems for, again, we found a problem that we have found in other courts, and that is that that probation staff were making the decisions about whether someone on probation should pay the monthly supervision fee or if they should do community service. The law requires that a judge, not a probation officer, make that determination. We also found that that we weren't collecting the required legal counsel fees from defendants in the courts, and so we, again, these are problems that we have seen throughout the court system. Some in the court system will say, well, judges aren't making these decisions because they don't have the time. They've got too much to do, so they just let the probation officers do it. And our response to that is, well, that sounds like a good reason, but if you've got a good reason for doing it, it still is not consistent with the law. You go get that law changed, and then you can do what you think is a good practice, but you can do it within the law. So we, obviously we want the justice system to follow the law. We want to make sure that if people are doing community service, that it's because there's been a finding that they can't afford the probation fees. We want to make sure that they're actually doing all the hours of community service that they are supposed to. And there weren't adequate systems in place in the court to ensure that was happening. And then there were other problems that just related to really problems with the buildings where they are. There were lack of fire detectors, alarms, sprinklers, faulty windows. We found that there. The court just rents the space, though, from the Plymouth County House of Plymouth County Commissioners, so they don't have control over the building to make those kinds of changes, but they are going to bring it up with the commissioners as to how they can just take care of some of those structural safety and security issues as well.
I think you might have already answered my question.
Yes.
You had mentioned courts. Is this as far as the courts in the county have these similar issues, or around the state have some
all
of these issues?
All across the Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. All across the Commonwealth. You know, part of this is money. Part of it is management and the setting of management priorities. It's why the legislature decided a couple of years ago that they were going to put a business office into the court system, so that somebody it could keep an eye on financial management and accountability. Well, let the judges run the courts and the judges and the clerks handle the dockets, but you need someone with a good business eye actually doing the business administration aspect of the delivery of justice. And so they have put that structure in place now after the legislature required it. So we have some people there who are trying to get a handle on things, but you know, there are a lot of problems that they have to address within the court system in order to get it running with more accountability and more efficiency. So we're going to keep calling out all of the deficiencies there, and try not to be too impatient with them in getting it done. But we're going to still stay right on them.
When do you do a follow up audit just to kind of see how they have addressed the issues that were pointed out in the audit?
Well, so in 6 months, we just issued that audit a few weeks ago. So in 6 months, we will go back, and we won't do an audit, but we will ask the court system to give us a progress report. We will go back and do a full audit in another couple of years. But what we find across all of the audits that we do, that about 95% of the recommendations that we make do get implemented. So these are not audits that are just being done, putting a lot of findings on paper and then the paper going up on a shelf where nobody ever sees it. We stay on top of all of the auditees to make sure that they're implementing our recommendations. And if not, telling us why. Is it because you don't have the money? Did we recommend something that was actually beyond your statutory authority? Is it simply not a practical suggestion? We want to have that kind of input so that we can improve our own ability to make government work better.
Anything you want to say in closing in regards to the audit of Plymouth Superior Court?
No, I just want to say that you're part of the problem. This isn't just bad management at that court. This is a legacy of problems with the administration of that system. That's not an excuse; it's a reason, and we'll stay on top of what's going on there as well as across the system.
Okay, I probably one last thing I'll ask you before I let you go. In that, and that is, I guess for this session. I guess there's something you're proposing, some package of proposed legislation. Guess the package is an act to enhance the work of the state auditor. Talk to me about that.
Well, the main change, every year, all the executive agencies, just like the legislature, get to file legislation that they think will help them do our jobs better. So there are two things that I'm looking for that I think would be of interest to your audience. One is that we are looking for subpoena power so that when we are doing a case of public assistance fraud, because in addition to our auditing, don't forget that we also are the investigators of potential fraud in our public assistance programs, like MassHealth, but also food stamps and the welfare department. We are the investigators. So we're looking for subpoena power so that we can get access more quickly to financial records. And that's mostly what I mean mostly there is bank records. Banks are required to give us records if we ask, but frankly it takes forever. And we could resolve more of these potential cases of fraud more rapidly if we had subpoena power and we could force them to make the records available more quickly. So that's one of the bills that we are our filing. The other one is one that would help me determine whether the Department of Revenue is doing its job in making sure that there isn't business tax fraud. That is, making sure that businesses aren't taking business deductions or misusing tax incentives and the like, and would also allow us to analyze how effective all of these business tax breaks are at doing things like creating jobs. So it would give us access to information. What we need in order to do that kind of analysis about whether the Department of Revenue is properly policing tax returns and whether our tax policies are having the effect that we want, in order to do that kind of work, we need to be able to look at business tax returns, not audit them. I'm not interested in doing the job of the Department of Revenue, but I can't tell if the Department of Revenue is doing what it tells me it's doing, that it's looking at this kind of deduction, you know, how it is that they're setting their priorities for doing investigations. I can't just take them at their word. I have to actually look at the forms myself to verify that they are that they're doing that. So I have filed legislation that would allow me to look at, you just have access to tax returns to make sure that businesses aren't taking more than they are entitled and that the Department of Revenue has the controls in place to police it, and that we've got an effective tax code. It's great to put all these tax breaks on the books, but let's make sure that we're getting what we are, what we say we want when we create all of these incentives.
Those
are my two legislative priorities.
Now, I believe this is not the first time that you have pursued this legislation, is it, or is it?
No, you are exactly right. I filed it during the last legislative session, and it didn't go out of committee. I'm actually a little bit encouraged by the fact that if you remember, just a couple of weeks ago, our new governor, Charlie Baker. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, I don't think that this particular tax credit for filmmaking in the Commonwealth is really very productive. He said, you know, we're paying a huge subsidy. I think that given the magnitude of the tax breaks under the film tax credit, that it amounts to over $100,000 of subsidy, if you will, per job created. That is a heck of a lot of money. You know, when you look at this film credit as an investment in our economy, we're allowing $100,000 worth of taxes to be foregone in support of this industry. And the governor said, "This is not a good deal. This is not a good deal. There are better ways. We should just tax the industry the way all other businesses are, and if we think that we want to help the industry somehow, let's find a better way to do it and not give them this break." And I think that what bothers him most about the break, apart from the sheer size of the subsidy to the industry, is the fact that if the film company doesn't actually need...
Hello? I think we lost the auditor. And what she was talking with us about was some legislation that she is proposing, an act to enhance the work of the state auditor. I'm pretty sure you were following along with all that, Joe?
It's very comprehensive. Very comprehensive, as legislation can be.
Okay. Do we have her back? No. Well, we lost her. Hopefully, we can get her back. If we don't, I'm sure the next time we have the auditor on, we can chat with her. What I wanted to know was, she had mentioned about auditing businesses. The curious question, my next question would have been, is that are the business tax returns, are they going to be made public? So,
you know, I want to know. I would be interested to know how many audits are going on at one time in the office.
Do we have the auditor back on?
Yes, she's here.
I don't know what happened. We lost you.
Well, your engineer said that he pushed a button.
It happens.
It was the wrong button.
So you were, as you were as you were kind of wrapping that up, I guess the did you want to kind of close off the thought before I ask you another question?
No, that so at any rate, so we've refiled the legislation. I'm actually going to be talking to the governor about it. Given the fact that he's looking for effectiveness in our tax code, and are we really getting bang for our buck? I'm actually hopeful that he might be interested in the legislation that I filed.
Auditor, we want to thank you so much. You kind of stayed on a little bit longer than we expected, and we definitely appreciate it.
Well, thanks. It's my pleasure.
No, we'll definitely have you back on in a series of weeks, as we always do.
Terrific.
As the stuff that you're working on, if folks want to find out some of the stuff that you're working on and what the auditor's office is all about, how can they do that?
Oh, visit our website. Everything that we do, all the reports, all of our audits, everything is online at www.mass.gov/auditor.
Auditor, thank you so much as always, and we'll definitely talk soon and have a good St. Patrick's Day.
Thanks so much.
You got it.
You too. Bye-bye.
We're going to step aside for a moment when we come back for more Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.